If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, good evening. I'm Carol Gold. You're listening, yes, to Above the Fray. Our number here, 914-803-4522. Steve, my co-host, are you there?
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Steve. We've got so much to cover tonight, and I know we've got people who are very interested in this topic, so let's get to it. Again, the reminder, 914-803-4522. Join in on the conversation. Today's Supreme Court rulings are incredibly disturbing for a variety of reasons, and I get to be lawyer on this show, which I don't often put that hat on. But this is a day that really hurts me in my heart because of why I came to the law originally to practice. And the problem with today's decision has nothing to do with Obamacare, actually. I could care less about Obamacare, just as I, in a way, the decision that's going to come down tomorrow or Monday on same-sex marriage, making it the law of the land, which I'm pretty certain that's how they will rule, also is not what bothers me. What bothers me deeply, what troubles me deeply, and what should trouble every free American is that the Supreme Court has decided in these decisions, no pun intended, that it is no longer bound by the Constitution, that it can legislate as opposed to adjudicate. And so the separation of powers that was written into the Constitution by the founders was done so for a specific reason, and that was that they understood the inherent power grab and greed that would inevitably happen in the system in which they were structuring the future of the United States. And so they made their best attempt to divide the powers. And actually, the People's House, which is called Congress, was really to be the most powerful of the three. Despite the language separate but equal, the People's House was supposed to be the one that held the power because it held the voice of the people and had the ability to reflect the will of the people. President Obama, throughout his administration, and most recently and egregiously toward the end of his administration, has gone beyond the bounds of the executive branch and what it has the authority to do under the Constitution. Congress has abdicated its responsibility under the Constitution by abdicating to the executive. And now today, finally, we have the judicial branch having moved beyond its parameters as well. And so, Steve, I guess where we can kick this off is I'm concerned that, in essence, the Republic died today. That's the downside. I have good news before the show is over, but let's start with what appears to be on the surface some very troubling decision. Steve?
There's two things that I think that are first off, the law was passed on two premises. The first was when they passed the law, I shouldn't say passed law, when they jammed it through. One of the premises behind the law was that if people didn't sign up, they were going to be fined, and that's how they passed the bill. When they went to implementation, let me just backtrack. And the president and the supporters always pushed back, and they said it's not a tax. Well, when they finally brought it up to argument, or to the Supreme Court, they had to argue that it was a tax, even though when they pushed the bill, they said it was a fine. But when they actually argued it before the Supreme Court, they actually argued it was a tax. So it was just the opposite of how they jammed the bill down. The Supreme Court ruled yes, it was a tax. They agreed with them, and so the bill got passed. They got the support from the Supreme Court on the first go round. The second go-around was the architect of this bill was a gentleman by the name of Gruber. Gruber's gone out and said it and done many speeches, has said that the key component of this bill was the fact that they needed state exchanges to participate. And the reason behind it is that the federal government knew that it was going to be so cost prohibitive. The only way they could defray some of these costs was by getting political pressure and getting the government to create state governments to subsidize it and create exchanges that would put pressure on the state governments to do it and also defray the cost. What happened, and that's how the law was passed. When they went to argue today, a lot of the states had not decided to implement it because they knew it was a money loser, and so the Obama administration basically was able to say, or their argument was, what they meant to say in the bill was that the state meant the federal government, and the Supreme Court agreed with them. When they meant state, it actually meant the government is part of being the state. And so here we have two different cases where the Supreme Court has gone in and aided and abetted a law that had many, many flaws to it. And the way it came out today, one of the justices that basically said, we should not call this Obamacare, we should actually call this SCOTUSCARE, the bill supported by the Supreme Court. By the Supreme Court. And the last point that I just want to say on this point is Ted Cruz came out today and he made an interesting point. He said that if the Supreme Court wants to legislate, then what they should do is they should actually leave their post and become legislators. But what they're doing is not legislating. What they're doing is finding things in the bill that never existed. And the meaning of words, which we've talked about at length in the show, today was another great illustration about what words mean and the death of words in this country. Carol, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do, Steve. I have a couple of thoughts. First of all, the justice that you quoted that said it should be called SCOTUSCARE was Antonin Scalia. And at times, Scalia is too conservative for me, but you cannot take away from the fact that he is a brilliant, brilliant jurist with an incredible mind. And in this dissent, which it was a 6-3 decision today, in this dissent, he was brilliant throughout his dissent in making the points you just made, one of them being it should be called SCOTUSCARE, because in essence, the Supreme Court created Obamacare officially today in a way that it had not been created originally by the drafters. When we talk about the drafters, you mention Jonathan Gruber. Jonathan Gruber, I want to give our listeners a little background because I think it's important to bring Jonathan Gruber forward to today because it's very telling. His story is very telling in terms of the evolution of Obamacare. Jonathan Gruber was brought on. He was a primary architect of Obamacare. However, when it was revealed, by the way, when it was revealed as the result of a talk radio listener who just went on the internet because something didn't feel right to him, and I happened to have heard the day this guy called in. I believe he's a lawyer from Pennsylvania. He said he started doing his homework on the internet, and he found all these recorded speeches, audio of Jonathan Gruber, talking post-passage of Obamacare, where Gruber is talking to select audiences, but they were recorded, and he is saying, we deliberately were deceitful in crafting Obamacare because, number one, we knew that wealthy people who were healthy were not going to stand for paying for the medical care of poor people who were unhealthy, nor would young people stand for being exorbitantly charged to pay for the health care of elderly people. And so they were deliberately deceitful. He said it would have been nice to have been able to have been transparent, and I'm quoting him. It would have not been nice to have been able to be transparent. However, we couldn't. So he was saying that the ends justified the means, lying to the American public knowingly was validated by the fact that they got the end result they wanted. Okay, that was number one. Number two, when those audios became public knowledge and began to go viral, the Obama administration said they had no knowledge of who Jonathan Gruber was. And so for several months, almost I think for the past year, it has sort of been the position that they had no idea in the White House who Jonathan Gruber was. And in fact, the president was asked that in an early press conference after Gruber was revealed to have said what he said about Obamacare. And the president said he had no idea who Jonathan Gruber was. It now turns out in emails that have been released through the Freedom of obtained through the Freedom of Information Act in the past few days, that Jonathan Gruber, there are emails between very high up assistants to the president and Jonathan Gruber calling him their hero in crafting Obamacare. So the White House not only lied about knowing him, the White House lied about his role in crafting Obamacare, and the White House knew that he was knowingly lying in the structure of Obamacare. In other words, they were deliberately deceiving the public for the purpose of getting it passed. The other thing that Gruber revealed in his audios was that what you referred to, Steve, as the state the state exchanges, let me clarify also for our listening audience, that the state exchanges were as opposed to the federal exchange. You could buy your insurance on the state exchange if your state set up an exchange, or on the federal exchange. If you bought it on the state exchange, you were eligible for subsidies. Well, when all the states that did, 30-some, however, refused to set up Obamacare exchanges because they realized that it was a financial disaster, then Obamacare wanted to give people who signed up on the federal exchange subsidies. But that was deliberate. That was not written into the bill. It was specifically excluded from the bill. The bill that was later passed as the law. So when they were before the Supreme Court recently, what the administration argued, what the Supreme Court legislated as opposed to adjudicated in this decision is that the word state for purposes of state exchanges in the bill actually applies to the federal government. And as Scalia said in his dissent, words lose all meaning under this decision, because if state means federal, then the definition of state has no meaning any longer. So the Supreme Court just turned language on its ear, and it turned the Constitution upside down, and it violated the limits of its own purview in this decision. Now, if I could, there was another decision today, and it was the Texas housing decision. Are you aware of this decision, Steve?
No, I'm not.
It's more troubling than the Obamacare decision, and here's why. A case was brought in Texas, and the Supreme Court heard it today. And what they ruled is that you can claim discrimination in housing simply by the presence or absence of a minority. You can imply discrimination even if you can't factually prove it. You can imply it by the numbers. So if you have an expensive neighborhood and everyone in that neighborhood happens to be white, you can now, if you want to live in that neighborhood, sue. And the Supreme Court ruled today that under implied discrimination, you can be forced to let someone live in that neighborhood who can't afford it otherwise. And of course, how's that going to happen? Well, the government's going to subsidize that person. So in essence, it's forced integration of neighborhoods regardless of financial ability to afford it. It's more absurd than all of the mortgages that were issued to people who couldn't afford to pay them. It's more absurd than that, and it's infinitely more dangerous than that. Now, you can argue, rightfully so, that maybe the absence or the presence, but mostly the absence of a specific ethnic group in, let's say, a university, and the example that comes to mind are disproportionately low number of Asians admitted to Ivy League schools in this country, you can argue that there is an element of discrimination there, but not where money's involved. If you're talking about the ability to afford a neighborhood, you can't imply discrimination where the passage into that neighborhood has to do with your financial ability to afford it. Steve, there's wind or noise coming from your end, so if you know what that is and you can do anything about it, that would be great. So the decision today is equally disturbing. And let me just preempt, Steve, what I think is coming with same-sex marriage being the law of the land and why that is another danger. I could care less who anybody sleeps with or who they marry, but quite honestly, at least civilly, who they marry. But to rule that same-sex marriage is the law of the land will make it a federal crime not to marry a same-sex couple. And if you are a church or a synagogue or even a mosque and you don't want to marry because you're the head religious leader of that institution and your religion says you can't marry people of same sex because it's a sin or an abomination or whatever it is you might think it is under the religious tenets, you may lose your charitable status. You may lose your status as a religious institution. You may be forced under federal law, under penalty of either imprisonment or fine, to marry a same-sex couple, even if it violates your religion. So the danger of the same-sex marriage case is of ruling that it's the law of the land goes way beyond marriage. It goes way beyond the burden it will impose on religious institutions. It will open the door to other kinds of intrusion by the federal government into what it deems to be discriminatory. We have crossed the Rubicon, as they say, and we're in a very dangerous place. Now, Steve, before I turn it back to you, I want to just give our listeners a little hope here. Because it can be overwhelming, and today was really a day that when these decisions came down, it was very easy to feel like, you know what, there's no hope. We're done. Let me preface the hope by saying this. We are an experiment in human history, this country. We're babies. We're, what, 300 years old or less? We're babies. The experiment doesn't necessarily have to succeed. Nothing like it has ever succeeded before in human history. However, sometimes, in order for the caterpillar to become the butterfly, the caterpillar has to go through an incredibly painful change. I believe that what has been forced upon us, like hope and change, is the collapse of the system. The transformation, the fundamental transformation of America that Barack Obama promised in 2008 and has accomplished in the last 6 years, and he isn't done accomplishing it, and it isn't just him. It's the entire progressive movement in the United States that has infiltrated our education systems that has been in process for 100 years. They finally got what they wanted. They are under the rules of Saul Alinsky and Cloward and Piven. They are going to collapse the system. However, here's the good news, everybody. They think they can manage the collapse. That's their ace in the hole. They've got all kinds of plans for managing the collapse so that what's on the other side of the collapse is one world government with socialism pretty much everywhere. In a way, they're not much different than ISIS. ISIS wants to get you there by beheading you, and the progressives want to get you there, meaning under their thumb and rule, with one set of rules, them making all of them top down. They want to get you there through breaking your will to fight for the things that America has stood for all of its existence, which is freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and the ability to pursue a life of happiness. The good news is they can't manage the collapse. Yes, we're in for rough times. Yes, it isn't going to take much for us to find ourselves suddenly in a very crisis-oriented situation, whether it's the economy or it's an attack or it's a natural earth event, whatever it is, we're so spread thin that almost anything now can do the damage that will be done. However, they can't manage it, Steve. And what's going to happen is that we're going to get an opportunity, both as spiritual beings, as children of God, and as Americans who have a heritage and a history of getting tough when the tough gets going, we're going to have an opportunity to actually get it better and get it right, get it better than we've ever had it before. It's going to take a lot of individual courage. It's going to take people with the courage to stand. It's going to take people who understand the principles that are on the line and the danger of not standing for those principles. But I believe there are enough of us. I believe there are enough of us. And what ISIS and the progressives, and I'm sorry to lump them together, are trying to do, ISIS through submerging and drowning people and decapitating people and crucifying children, and the progressives by so overloading us with financial and social stress that we think that we just can't take it anymore, what's going to happen is there'll be a break point. And the break point will be when we rise and become our highest selves and show the world what we are really capable of. I believe that moment will come. That's the hope I want you to hold on to. Steve, we've got plenty of time. Address any of what I've said or any of what you want to add on the opinions. Oh, I'm sorry. Steve, your line dropped, but now you're back. Go ahead.
Yes, I think a key point that I think is not being addressed here is the whole matter of free association, of the ability for individuals to group however they want to group. And you know, the nation was founded, supposedly, by people leaving Europe for religious freedom. And when I look at it, I don't look at them as saints, but I look at them as people like all of the people. They just want to live their lives and live it in peace and being left alone. And there's a lot of decisions that are all being culminated that are restrict these things. So, you know, number one, insurance and this healthcare exchange that gets set up today, however you want to deem it, the left is happy about this decision, but let's call it what it is. Everybody who now is under this thumb is going to have less options and less chances to get better medical care for themselves. That's really what that decision is made. If anybody thinks otherwise, you're crazy. We all have just, that decision today is limiting all of our abilities and all of our choices to make the choices that we want to make. You touched on a second point today, and a second point that I also thought was interesting was the Supreme Court ruling today about where you live. I think, you know, where you live is kind of the most basic, fundamental, you know, kind of really the right to raise your kid and raise your families in an environment that you think is appropriate for you and appropriate for your upbringing. And in many cities, there's Irish enclaves, there's Italian enclaves, there's Black enclaves. They're self-selecting enclaves. They've decided to live in those areas because they feel most at home with those areas. And it's a natural tendency for people to do that. I think, you know, the decisions that they're making today are really at the root of destroying that. And if you don't believe me, look at what they're doing with a lot of the refugees that are coming into the U.S. are being bused and moved. And a lot of, especially the Middle Eastern people are being bused and moved into predominantly white areas, Idaho, Montana, these areas that are essentially uniform in speech and thought, and they've been self-selected. They've decided that's where they want to live. And when I see things like that, it's almost like a complete attempt to break those societies, those little societies, mini societies, and break them apart. And the last part that I want to touch on is, again, getting back to marriage. The thing that I thought was most interesting, during this time period of the last couple of years, there's been all this reverse racism where all these gay couples all of a sudden appear at Christian bakeries, and what's the first thing they do? They cry bigotry because the Christian or the religious baker won't make them a product that they want. you know, the way that I look at business, for the most part, is that most businesses are small business owners, and it's their own business. They're in the business to make money. They're not in the business. They're not in the business to cater to people that they don't want to cater to. It's their own business. They risk capital. They took the risk. They should have the ability to sell who they want to sell to. I'm not talking about overt racism, but if there's a client, you know, if there's a client that they deem difficult or they don't want to serve, why shouldn't they be able to not serve them? I don't see how that's a major deal that they get played upon. But naturally, what the left does is they attack people who select and self-select their customers because that's the business that they're in. So I think if you look at the three cases today, I mean, they're all at the root of people self-selecting and the government trying to get it in between them. I think that's a very dangerous precedent that we're going down.
Well, I think we're there. I don't even think we're going down there. I mean, I think we're there. I think they've done it, and now it's a matter of living out the repercussions and the consequences and what that's going to look like. Steve, I want to just, in the last 3 or 4 minutes, I want to just shift here for a minute because something very dangerous is happening in the Middle East, and there are many people, you know, who could claim innocence leading up to World War II because the world did not know where the train tracks had been laid or where they went or what was at the end of them and that there were gas chambers. Governments may have known, but the average person didn't know. We were well into the war before the concentration camps and their reality became news to the average person. It is not the case today. The internet has removed that argument of innocence from anyone and everyone. ISIS is marking homes in Middle Eastern countries with the letter U and a dot in the middle. The symbol means Nazarene. Once they mark the home with a symbol, like the yellow star for Jews in Germany, then everyone in the home is killed. But they are killed by torture. It's not, and the house is leveled, and the children taken into slavery. There is the equivalent, and I don't use this word lightly, Holocaust of Christians in the Middle East, and the world is silent and watching. You know, 3 or 4 sorties a day or whatever we're doing is a joke. These are dangerous people with a global vision no different than Adolf Hitler's. And the Christians are who are taking the initial hit. They're on the march. They want the Jews. They want the Westerners. But, you know, there's that saying, first they came for the however the saying goes, first they came for the gypsies or first they came for the homosexuals and I didn't care because I wasn't a homosexual and then they came for the – and you get it. In the end, they come for you and there's no one to stand for you because we were silent while they were coming for everyone that we were not. Kid yourself not. The Christians in the Middle East are only the beginning. ISIS really does need to be addressed. It needs to be stopped. They are sadistic. They are merciless. They are pure evil. And there isn't a person in the world with access to the internet who doesn't know this. And shame on all of us for remaining silent as this massacre increases day by day. I realize it's almost a show in itself or more than one, and we'll take it up in the future, Steve, but I needed to get that into today's show because the video yesterday of what they did in both drowning and in both blowing the heads off of Christians was some of the most graphic and disturbing things. I didn't intend to see it. I saw it by accident, and I turned away too late. And quite honestly, I cannot get the visions out of my mind. We really have to stand and do something to stop the march of evil that's taking place in the Middle East called ISIS or ISIL. So thanks for listening. We're going to make it, folks. Just, you know, keep an eye on the prize. We're going to make it. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
And we'll be back again next Monday night. That's right, at 6 p.m. Central. Blessings, everybody. Have a great weekend. Keep your eyes and ears open and keep your mind on the values and principles that matter. Good night.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.